Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Bruin podcast. In this week's edition, we'll be speaking to Ben Lord, manager of the M&G Inflation-Linked Corporate Bond Fund, on a day when a little bit more positive sounding news from Brexit has seen the pound rallying. So we'll be finding out whether that's likely to continue. So we'll be checking with our guest to find out what he thinks about the outlook for sterling.
So the fundamental medium-term outlook for the pound is definitely weak.
So to find out why Ben thinks that, and for a more general discussion about the outlook for inflation, listen to the podcast after the following messages.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation, which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Okay, so welcome back to another Bruin podcast. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking now to Ben Lord, who is the manager of the M&G Inflation-Linked Corporate Bond Fund. Hi, Ben. Thanks for joining us. So I guess the obvious place to start off with then is inflation. Do you think it's going to be high or low?
Interesting. It feels like we started the year with CPI at around 3 and we're going to end the year closer to 2. That was the general glide path. The Bank of England, though, started to predict that we would see wages rise. Now, as for the drivers of wage rises, that's debatable and there are probably different interpretations. But actually, there have been 2 months now in a row where we've seen wages surprise to the upside.
Yeah.
And I think
so Bank of England in correct forecasting shock then.
It is. Although actually when it comes to wages, the Bank of England agents who are dotted around the country and who engage with their local economies and management and people who work at the companies that employ people in their regions, they put out every year their wage forecast in January. And it's not a national statistic. It doesn't get the coverage it deserves. But basically, every year, it's pretty much spot on. And this year, they forecast an increase. I think it was to around 2.5% in 2018. And sure enough, it looks like that's where we're heading. So the Bank of England, through their agents, tend to get wages right. The rest, you know, when it comes to actual inflation or GDP or other things like that, we know that they are not the best forecaster out there. But forecasting is an impossible thing anyway.
I know you explained a bit. Just to be clear, the agents are regional representatives of the bank who go and speak to real businesses and ask them questions about what they're doing. So there's a good reason why they're quite switched on to these things.
And they have time and again got the wage number right. And it's the first time in a number of years that we've seen a meaningful pickup, step change in wages. Now, I think the interesting thing around that expected increase in wages, which is pretty well in train now, is that it finds its source from the Bank of England's bearishness around Brexit. We know that Mark Carney is very nervous about Brexit. He sees it as being a bad thing for the economy. And frankly, he made it pretty clear in the campaign, which was, you could criticise, you know, how political the Bank of England became in that campaign. But he sort of said that if Brexit happens and it happens abruptly and not as softly as it possibly can, then you're going to lose the source of cheap labour that has benefited the UK economy for so many years. And that seems to be, it's sort of a bad wage rise type environment.
Okay, so you're saying this sort of justifies his concern, the evidence is supporting the concern that he had?
So far, that seems to be the case. Now, the Bank of England stepped up its hawkishness in November of 17, I think it was, and it caught the market by surprise. It led to pretty sharp repricing in yields, albeit we were at incredibly low levels and there was practically no meaningful volatility anywhere in the markets at that point. But there was a pickup in vol in UK rates. There was a parallel shift in the curve. And that was driven by the moment where Mark Carney came out and said, actually, now that we know that Brexit is coming and there are negotiations going on, in our view, the Bank of England's view, the UK is now operating above its trend rate of growth, its sustainable rate of growth. And given that, we feel that as the Bank of England, we're going to have to be moved towards the hawkish side. So effectively, it was a bad step up in hawkishness because it came from a revision down in their expected sustainable level of growth,
right,
which meant that the level of growth that we were at and are at today is unsustainably high in the Bank of England's opinion.
Even though it doesn't seem terribly high to everybody else, we've
had a bad interest rate hike already on the back of it. It was a revision down in growth estimates and expectations, and therefore to elongate the cycle, they felt they had to hike and step up their hawkishness. So it's all linked. But to my mind, the Bank of England, make no mistake, the Bank of England is very concerned from an economical perspective about Brexit.
And is that borne out then in what we see in terms of productivity? Because that would be if productivity improves, then you can shoulder higher wage increases.
Yeah.
But their thesis then is that productivity isn't going to improve.
I don't know. I can't put words in the Bank of England's mouth and Mark Carney's mouth. I would have to say that the US has seen CapEx growing in double digits for a sustained period of time. It's now settled down in the high single digit range. So after a prolonged period where increased demand was being met by just hiring more heads into jobs in the US, now there isn't much labour left. They're having to pay people more to get to entice the right people into the jobs that they've got to meet their higher demand. And you've had now at least a year of really strong capital investment. That should, somewhere down the line, see an end to the productivity puzzle that has been so discussed and observed in the US. We are not seeing anything like that level of investment. And it was obvious from the day of the referendum decision. You just look back at past episodes of uncertainty, and the first place that it gets felt is in investment. Why would you conduct a long lead order investment, i.e. build a new factory that may take 3 years to come online at its full capacity? Why would you do that if you're uncertain about who your client is going to be in 3 years' time? And actually, this was certainly not the intended purpose of today's conversation, I don't think, but another piece of information that we get from the Bank of England agents was about that. In the aftermath of the referendum decision, they were talking to the companies in those regions, and they asked them about how their order growth was. And they split the companies into three types, ones with very short lead order times, intermediate and long ones. And the first place that you could see a drop off in demand was in the long lead order and intermediate categories of companies rather than the short ones. So again, it's borne out by data that we see. Unfortunately, it's very backward looking and it is slightly finger in the air. Nonetheless, the only data I've seen on it suggests
That investment point, because that's exactly what we thought on the day of the referendum, that this would be reflected in weaker investment. And that's really the justification for why the bank were so loose with their policy at the time. I mean, it's reflected in components of the construction PMI, for example.
Yeah, it is. It does. I do struggle with the construction PMI. because everywhere I go, I seem to see cranes. But, you know, there seems to be building going on all
that's
over the
things,
place. But
things take a long time to build,
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so... but this is again. So do you think the bank is correct then in making this assessment? You're expecting wages to continue to be high, and therefore that to be an inflationary thing?
No, I think the wage rises that are coming are bad wage rises. It's not because companies are in positions of strength. It's not because they're seeing strengthening demand.
Right, I see.
I would probably say I'd agree entirely with Carney's step change in hawkishness when he said, on the balance of information as we see it, we think that UK sustainable growth for the intermediate term until we've got some clarity and we know the shape of the economy, it's going to be lower than it was previously. It's frustrating because were it not the case, when the referendum happened, the UK looked very close to the US in terms of being at the same part of the cycle. The labour market looks the same in the UK as the US, or certainly did at the time. I think you'd struggle to make the same comparison now, barring the unemployment figure itself, the headline unemployment figure, which is still at the lowest level since 1975.
Well, then the wage growth almost looks a bit higher, but that's your point. It's the wrong kind of wage growth.
It's the wrong kind. And I worry about productivity going forward. If you're paying people higher wages and you haven't got demand, you know that you've got a productivity problem ahead.
So does that mean you're concerned? Does that mean you think this inflation is going to go away then, because it's going to sort of eat itself or something? Or does it mean you're expecting a sort of stagflationary type scenario?
I would say any fund manager, any participant in the UK economy now who's trying to have a view over a meaningful period is frankly guessing. So I'm in fund manager speak, you might say it's a low conviction world. I just don't know what the economy is going to look like, even now 4 months away, 5 months away. It seems that every day the expectation changes. It sounds from on certain mornings like you're very close to having a deal. And if the current Prime Minister, Theresa May, gets that deal, it's going to be on the softer side. Then you've got the risk of a political crisis if her party managed to enforce a leadership contest. And then ultimately you can face down a general election if you get 3/4 of MPs declaring a vote of no confidence. So, again, it's very, very difficult for me to have a view. And if it's a low conviction world, you don't want to have very aggressive positions on as it relates to the UK, frankly.
All right. Well, if the underlying economic circumstances are so difficult to forecast, let's go to something much easier then. Normally, inflation statistics are very heavily influenced by the oil price. So we've obviously got quite a strong oil price at the moment. Is that going to be a big driver of CPI going forwards?
It is a big driver. I would say in the UK, though, the biggest driver is the pound.
Yeah.
And which shows itself in oil figures as well. And frankly, again, you've got a hugely uncertain outlook for the pound. So if we're talking against the dollar, if we're talking about cable, we're around the 130 level now. We were at 165 ahead of the referendum. We fell to 135. And then on the day that the Prime Minister made I think it was the Lancaster House speech, where it was no customs union, free movement of people, it sounded much harder than the investment markets, at least, were hoping for. And sterling cable went to 119 for a matter of minutes and then rejected 119. But so you've got a very, very wide range in post-referendum world, between 140, low 140s and 119. And funnily enough, we're slap bang in the middle of that range now, just slightly underneath it, which suggests that the market is more concerned about a harder outcome than a soft one. Now, fundamentally, the outlook for sterling is poor, because fundamentally, medium term, you've got to look at the current account balance, and our current account is in deficit, and it's in significant deficit, probably in the 6% of GDP area. That is a worse current account deficit than we had before we were bailed out by the IMF in 1974. That's a worse current account deficit than before George Soros made his £1 billion trade on sterling falling as it left the ERM. So the fundamental medium-term outlook for the pound is definitely weak. And then you have Brexit being the near-term catalyst. Now, a soft Brexit may get a very benign deal through. You could easily expect to test 150, to see cable test 150. A bad one, you will test 120. And then I think if you look at a political crisis, whether that is a significant swerve to a very anti-European right of the Conservative Party, you're going to test the lows, you're going to go through 119. And then if you get a general election and some of the policies that the opposition are talking about today, you're probably going to test something that we haven't seen in generations. So the outlook is not good. And that really, it is so important to UK inflation. We've seen it time and again. We saw it in the aftermath of the great financial crisis. And we saw it again after the referendum, sterling fell by 20%. And RPI and CPI in the UK went up significantly over the course of 2016.
This current account issue has been a long-standing one. I mean, it's been getting progressively worse for sort of 40 years or something. Is it because of Brexit that you think that the chickens might come home to roost now, or it's just the level that it's got to?
The level isn't great. Certainly, globalization and the modern global economy is happier to finance deficit countries for longer periods of time than we were used to in the 70s and 80s. That's definitely a valid observation and a fact about the modern economy. But yeah, you worry about current account deficits when there is a reason for that deficit to be forced back into balance. And given the levels of uncertainty around the UK and government and policy and the sort of rising level of extremes in politics, these are the kinds of things that could see a deficit get forced into balance. And that's what we all want to avoid.
It's about being attractive to foreign capital,
yeah,
right?
We need foreign investors to finance our deficit every day.
Okay, and outside of the UK then, because these are all what you're focusing on, very UK-centric sort of factors. More broadly then, the US is obviously quite, got a tight labour market and so on and so forth. Europe, a bit more of a debate about that. Let's focus on Europe.
Yeah.
Would you say Europe is tight or...
I think that global bond markets, we've discussed the UK and I'm just not happy to give a view because I think it's guesswork. I think if I was to have a very strong view one way or another, I'd effectively be talking my book, and that's just meaningless. So I think it's rational and responsible to point that out. So I can't have a view I don't know. In the US, the labour market is on fire. They are not done with their hikes, even with all these exogenous issues such as trade wars and geopolitics that's always there. They are on a sustained upward path of interest rate hikes. And it's
how far is it going to go? Any idea?
Another 2 to 4. Easily.
2 to 4 hikes?
Yeah.
Right.
Now, the labour market is incredibly tight. And what are we being told to do in bond markets? You've got 5-year yields at 3%. And you've got 30-year Treasury yields at 3%. The curve is incredibly flat. Well, for that reason, you're being told not to take significantly higher levels of interest rate risk for the same level of yield. So 2, 3, 4, 5-year Treasury yields at around 3% are, to my mind, and frankly, to the global investor, are attractive. given everywhere else is in the developed world is stuck very near zero still, even negative in Europe. So you're being told to do that. That's an obvious trade. That is why the dollar is strong and is going to remain strong for some period of time. If there's a global investor who wants to buy the dollar, they're going to buy treasuries and they're going to buy them at the short end. So it just that's what we're being told as bond investors to do. Europe is another area of huge uncertainty. That it's still such a disparate region. Germany should not have policy rates that are negative. That's profoundly unhealthy. That's why you've got a booming property market in Germany, very low levels of unemployment. But there's an elephant in the room, and that is Italy. Now, if we go back to the 2011-2012 type scenario where people are worried about the euro existentially, then European banks are going to get carried out. There's going to be huge risk off. Bunds, you'd imagine, would rally. The peripherals will start to go. They'll go straight back to 7% in yield, you would have thought. For as long as Mario Draghi is in charge of the ECB, you would expect them to remain to step up at that moment and start buying a lot more government debt and corporate debt than it has been so far. But I think it's probably easier to have a view on the Italian situation in a way that I can't on the future of the UK economy. Politically, the Italian government does not have a mandate to pull Italy out of the euro. That is not why the government are there. Once again, you've got a coalition, but the majority of people, 50.1% of the people, do not want the crisis that will unfold of pulling Italy out of the euro. And the first place the ECB will go to will be to say, well, we're no longer standing up behind your banks. And you will then have a run on Italian banks. So that would clearly be a huge market event, probably the biggest since 2007-08. That isn't what the mandate is for. Now, there is one major party of this coalition who would love to see that as an outcome, but they do not have a political mandate to do that. So what are they trying to do? This is a coalition of two very different parties trying to cobble together one single message through brinkmanship, negotiation, heavy-handed tactics, frankly.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what are they after? Well, they're not happy with growth, and they would like to have a slight loosening of the fiscal rules that come from the Maastricht Treaty to enable them to try to get some growth as opposed to having to cut, because they're anti-austerity. Now, they are anti-austerity. So they are in a negotiation with the European system as to trying to generate more growth than they've got. And this is going to lead to some incredible headlines. But frankly, I just don't see us going back to those 7% yields that we saw in Italian 10-year government bonds in 2011-12. So for that reason, I think you can't get excited about German government debt at these valuations, 10-year government bonds being less than 50 basis points in Germany at the moment. Clearly, there's no valuation argument to be had there. But there are areas of cheapness. The bank bonds spreads there have widened, so the prices of those bonds have fallen.
Yeah.
I think there are definitely opportunities to pick defensive names who aren't overly exposed to Italian government debt and the Italian economy. Spain has started to trade with a high correlation to Italy after trading strangely with a very low one. But I do think there are opportunities, so long as this view remains in place, that the Italian people don't want to be pulled out of the euro and have a banking crisis thrown in for good measure. Then I think there are opportunities, particularly on the credit side, particularly on the investment grade credit and bank bond and insurance bond side.
Okay, well, look, we could talk about this for a lot longer, but I know we've got more to get through. So thank you very much, Ben. I really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to all our listeners, and make sure that you stay tuned and listen to the next Brewing podcast, which will be with you shortly.